You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I mean, what are we doing here?
I think he's the philosopher of football.
It's great that everyone can give their opinion.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Find me. I don't care anymore. So drain my bank account.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T Studios in New York City. David Goss and Bobby Warshaw joining you for this one. We've been left alone. Andrew Wiebe's on vacation. Kalen Carr, I assume, is on vacation. Matt Doyle, I assume, is sick. Susanna Collins, I assume, is doing cooler things. I know none of that is actually true besides the Andrew part, but I'm probably close on the other three.
They feel right.
They normally feel right, and that's how it normally goes. So myself and Bobby will be with you today for what's going to be a fantastic show. We had some great midweek action in Major League Soccer. We're coming up to the All-Star Game. There's going to be some really cool elements in this All-Star Game that we've never seen before, like a skills challenge between three sets of teams. The Orlando City team is going to be led by who else?
Nani.
Yeah, okay, fair. But also Chris Mueller. He's going to come on the show to talk to us about what he's looking forward to from that competition and what's going on with Orlando City, because they're having a pretty good run right now. We were down there just a week and a half ago for Open Cup, and they already made history going to that semifinal. So we'll talk to them about that. And then this weekend, there's a few soccer games in Major League Soccer. One of them is called El Trafico. Right. That's kind of a big one. LA versus LA. LAFC finally trying to get over the hump and get a win in that one. So we'll talk about that as well as your mailbag. But first,
David.
What?
We're doing the show together.
Yeah.
We don't get as much quality time together as we would like.
We get a lot of quality time. We basically have traveled 6 of the last 8 weeks together.
I want to know what's going on in your life right now.
So it's been an eventful week, I have to say. Monday I hosted Extra Time Radio because Andrew's not here, which was fantastic. Then I went out and played for my co-ed soccer team, and I got punched in the face in my co-ed soccer game.
Okay.
Yep. Wasn't my fault.
Is it bad that the first thing that comes to mind is you deserved it?
Yeah. It is. So it's not my fault. So here's what happened. I know everyone loves when we talk about the leagues we play in and what we do. This is a very Andrew Wiebe moment, but I'm going to tell you anyway. So obviously we're losing 2-0. I'm high pressing. The center back on the other team, this is 7v7 co-ed, so it's as intense as it can possibly get. I'm high pressing. Guy turns the ball over facing his own goal. I try and get around him, and he's much taller than me. So he puts his leg in front of me, and then he raises his arms, like you see very often, mm-hmm. hits me in the face with an elbow.
Mm-hmm.
So I grab his jersey a little and start pulling to get around him. I'd already yelled foul. Ref doesn't call the foul. We start scrapping with each other a little. Ref blows the whistle, calls the foul in my favor. Guy turns around, probably 3-4 inches taller than me, and goes, "Do it again. I dare you." I genuinely didn't know what I'd done wrong, but either way, it didn't matter. So I step to him and I say, "What?" And boom, he just open hand hits me in the face.
The first thing is that this is every single cliche about what people say about co-ed professional,
yeah,
adult co-ed sports.
For sure.
You are that person.
So he hits me in the face. The saddest part of the whole situation was our friend and one of our producers, Rich Hernandez, was in goal for us, which means he had to make a full field sprint because you know he has to get involved and escalate the situation worse. So I appreciate Rich, but I do apologize for doing it so far from his goal that he had to run that far.
Did no other teammates come to your defense?
No, everyone else was in there. Well, my girlfriend was the first to be like, "Stop it." And I was like, "Didn't do anything wrong."
Was she mad at you or was she mad at the other guy?
Me, 100%. Always on me. So that was Monday. Tuesday, I played in a men's rec league game, which was pretty uneventful. It was a little physical. And then I picked up this little beauty. And if you're not watching on YouTube, go to YouTube right there. You see that scratch, that scar coming down the left side of my, I think you could call that my bicep. A lot of muscle going on right now. I don't even know how it happened. I didn't even see the play. My team won 5-1. I'm unfortunate about
the
one.
So you are a very competitive adult league player.
It's been an eventful week, to say the least. So at any point throughout this show, if I say someone else's mentality or demeanor is wrong in Major League Soccer, you can know that I'm a hypocrite. And you can feel free to live with that. If anyone else has any cool stories, let us know. If anyone else plays in New York City and you were part of one of the two teams that has created me as a victim, I would take your apology. You can send it to extratime@mlssoccer.com or at extratime on social media if you want everyone to know. And I appreciate it. After the game, by the way, the guy who hit me in the face comes up and does like, "You know, it just happens" type thing. And it's like, no, I don't think it does. I'm not really going to go there with you, but I don't know. you know, Bobby, that's what it's like when you're out here on these streets. It's just physical. It's just intense. Moving on to off the streets, but on the field, to Major League Soccer. It was a interesting Wednesday night of action, a ton of action across the league. It's been so fun. Now that we're back from this, you know, international summer breaks, you're getting hot and heavy action all midweek as well as on the weekends. And let's start off with Chicago versus Columbus. Mm-hmm. It ended 2-2. Columbus gets a late goal to equalize, but we don't want to talk about this game specifically. We mentioned it on Monday. We want to talk about these clubs a little bit more, and we want to talk about Chicago specifically, because I think, Bobby, we were in a meeting yesterday talking about All-Star Game coming up, and I think back 2 years to going to Chicago for the All-Star Game right after Schweinsteiger comes in. Matt Pulser and Brandon Vincent are in the starting lineup. They're doing well. Nemanja Nikolic is scoring a ton of goals. Chicago Fire were the story in Major League Soccer at that time. They played pretty soccer. They were fun to watch. They were successful. And it was all going to continue to trend upwards. What has happened since then?
Ooh, man. Yeah, because remember, was it two months ago on the show, I said that I felt the Chicago Fire were one of the three best teams in the league. I feel that I was right then. I feel that it's actually not that far from being right now, David, because they are still a good team who plays fun soccer, who does a lot of good things, but they are too inconsistent. And the reason they are too inconsistent is by design, that they continue to try different things over and over. They try to be a flexible team. What happens, though, is they become a C average team at about five different things without being an A in any single thing. And if there's one truth in soccer, there's probably many truths, but one of the truths is that if you are not an A at least one thing before you try and be flexible, you will lose. And I look back to that 2017 season, and I know it's become a bit on this show to talk about David Akam, but that Chicago Fire team had Akam on the left. They were an incredible possession team that had an incredibly individually talented player who could do lightning in a bottle on any moment. He could stretch the field. He could beat players 1v1. And it allowed them to go all in on the possession because they had this natural variation built into that. They lose David Akam to Philadelphia in the big trade. They got what was the largest haul of TAM and allocation time, money in league history at the time. And since then, they have not gone all in on any single thing to build a true identity. And built within all of this is the decision to move Bastian Schweinsteiger at center back. David, can you think of another personnel lineup decision that has not just gone as poorly, but even in the moment felt as logically flawed as taking away one of the A, maybe one of the 1A center midfielders in the league, and moving him out of the position that was the central metronome to what gave you your 1A tactical philosophy to center back, where he is probably a C or a C minus center back in the league?
I don't disagree with you on his quality at center back. Do you think after 2.5 years playing in the summer, the travel, his age, that Bastian Schweinsteiger could still cover ground in midfield to be that 1A?
But if you're going to play center back in 2019, you have to be able to cover ground. You look at all center backs, they can both step into the midfield just as well as they can drop, turn their hips, and cover into the channel. They can win balls in the box. There are so few center backs right now who also aren't elite athletes that I'm not sure it covers up that problem to move him back. So, David, it's those two things. It's moving Schweinsteiger to center back, and it's just a lack of a true identity of actually being good at anything that has crushed this team in the last
So the identity you mentioned comes up when I watch them in that Frankowski, the first few weeks, I'm like, this is a guy who can initiate his own offense, can beat guys 1v1, can change the game. And then you look at guys like Nico Gaitán, who can do that as well, and Kataj and Erbers, and I've never seen a game where all of them do it at the same time. And I think it comes down to there are game styles that Pano plays that fit Frankowski's skill set. I think Gaitán's probably been the most consistent because I think he's the biggest alpha dog of all of them. But all the other guys, there are games where you're like, yep, that's CJ Sapong. Yep, that's Frankowski. Yeah, that's Kataj. That's a guy who can help power a team. And then you watch 4 weeks in a row and you don't see them engaged the same level or affecting the game in the same way.
Well, we talk about tactics, right? We talk about continuity. What tactics do is they give you answers. And when you have answers, you have conviction. When you have conviction, you have something to fall back on. So, David, the fact that they appear to lack confidence, that they appear to lack, the word I always like to use is conviction in what they're doing, that's because they don't legitimately have preset answers to what they're doing. This all comes back together. And the reason you can't get 5 or 6 players on the same page feeling confident is because if you don't have those preset answers, you're rolling dice, man. Mm-hmm. That's what you're doing. You're saying, we have talented players. Hopefully they hit at the same time. And maybe you can do that if you pick. I think back to the Houston Dynamo, right? I don't think Dom Kinnear gave a ton of preset answers, but he knew how to pick players. He knew how to pick a team. He knew how to give just the exact
right
amount of
instruction. But also the players he brought into the club, there was a clear way he was going to play because
exactly.
you were locking in on Wade Barrett.
It was a natural fit. It was a natural fit between player and manager and player and player. This Chicago team doesn't have that. So you are legitimately just rolling dice, hoping these talented players have a good performance. And this is not just Chicago, right? We could go through other MLS teams, other teams around the world that do this. But this is what separates the Chicago Fire from LAFC, who have a ton of preset answers, and you're not rolling dice. You have answers to fall back on that provide conviction, that then provide confidence, that then provide joy when these players step on the field.
So for Chicago, they drop late that result. They are still outside the playoff places. Nothing really changes on that front. A lot of question marks about what's going on. Nelson Rodriguez did an interesting interview yesterday, so I advise you to go online and look at that, where he basically said everything's up for options. The infrastructure of this club is not where we want it to be, and in terms of player roster, you know, everyone's on the table because it's not going well. Nemanja Nikolic isn't starting. You've got that front attacking few rotating in and out. There seem to be, and I don't know if this is just natural, just players being frustrated, but it looked like Francisco Calvo was having a heated discussion at the end of that game. I believe it was with Katai, but I wasn't exactly sure, where they were frustrated with what's going on. First of all, if you're another MLS team, are you looking at this and saying, these are guys that I can go in and get? Because there's clearly talent on this roster. Or let me ask it this way. The New England Revolution under Bruce Arena have turned things around because there was talent on this roster. Is that possible for the Chicago Fire team?
Yes, I would never say it's not possible, right? You would have never in a million years thought it was possible with San Jose this quickly with the roster as constructed. You would never probably in 1,000 years, 10,000 years, thought New England could do this. It's always possible. Cincinnati, and this is the thing I say over and over, coaching matters a ton. This is not to say Valko Panovich is a bad coach. It's clearly the wrong fit, but I don't know how to answer your question except to say, yeah, it's possible. But if I'm another MLS team, I don't think I would take any of those attackers right now just because the confidence is too low.
Oh, really? You wouldn't go out and say I could get probably for cheaper than what I would get, especially outside the league, on Frankowski, even Fabian Herbers. I mean, Mihailovic isn't going anywhere. That's clear. And so that's probably a starting spot. Dax McCarty's probably a guy who's a starter. There's extra numbers in that area, which I think if I'm another Major League Soccer team, I'm looking to go out and get, if possible. That's just how I see it. When you look at this club now, we know they're going to move from Bridgeview after this season. How long does it take them? What's the process to starting to, I don't know if it's reset because we said the talent's there, but move forward.
Oh, that's a really good question. I'm really fascinated by this infrastructure statement because people don't realize how much there is below the surface within these clubs. And use LAFC as the example, right? They get Diego Rossi, they get Eddie Segura, and they hit on both of them. Yeah. That doesn't come by accident, right? They went out, they found a scouting structure in South America. They found people they trust. They found liaisons, and they found contract negotiators.
Was that French or Spanish?
The word liaison?
Yeah.
It
was a lot of accent on that.
But when you talk about infrastructure, There is a reason that the best clubs continue to do well, and part of it's money spent, but it's infrastructure. So it's interesting that when you hear the Fire, who have not been good over the last, what has it really been? I don't know, 6-7 years.
Yeah, I'd say Dennis Hamlett's years. They were in the Eastern Conference Finals back to back years. Then it was a dry spell. Then you have 2017 now, it was, where they lost to the Red Bulls in the first round of the postseason, which I think was an upset.
So when you see a team consistently underperform the talent, there's usually something deeper. There's usually something below the tip of that iceberg. And if I'm a Fire fan, it's nice to hear that confronted and say, all right, it's actually the infrastructure, and we need to really rethink the foundation to what we provide the players.
And then you have the situations with Brandon Vincent, with Andrew Gutman, as well as Matt Polster, which I think a little bit less strong, which is local guys or non-local guys, but choosing to leave. And that was a very odd way that this offseason went about. So it'll be interesting to see what the next few weeks look like for the Chicago Fire in this transfer window as they try and reset themselves, but especially the next year or two, where they'll be playing their games and what this club will look like. On the flip side, for Columbus, they are in a tough spell as well. We will get to that more later on in the show. But Luis Diaz, their young DP that they signed out of Costa Rica, made his debut in this game. And a guy that you like a little bit, Eduardo Sosa, got the start at the number 10 spot.
I do like Eduardo Sosa. I also like Romario Williams. You just think about these players who are just underperforming. You feel like their talent has yet to come out. And I think both Romario Williams and Eduardo Sosa are both those players. I'm not sure they'll actually get the opportunity to do it, but I wouldn't mind.
But Jordan Hamilton and Romario Williams, you got to think Columbus brought them in and said, there's things we like about this year, but there's things we don't. Let's take a flyer on these guys that we think have talent. And we'll see what happens with them. I mentioned the New England Revolution because of their ability to turn it around. They've been phenomenal under Bruce Arena. They've yet to lose a game under their new manager, actually stretching before he took over. We talked about them making a record signing coming into this transfer window to open it up, to make this statement, to say, we're going to go and set a record fee on a striker. We're ready to win now and for the future. And it worked out pretty well for them. Bo scores on his debut, a 4-0 win against Vancouver. Midweek game, maybe hard one for Vancouver to travel for, but at the same time, this was a Revs team that was pretty much flying throughout this game.
They were awesome. They were really fun to watch. Basically, they set up, and I was texting with Doyle before the game about this, trying to figure out how they would formulate that lineup. Mm-hmm. And it basically turned into being two center backs, one defensive midfielder, one center striker, four other players who floated around, when Teal Bunbury, Gustavo Bo, Carlos Heel, and Juan Agudelo, and then two outside backs who basically functioned as wingers, providing the width as the other four attackers roamed around the middle finding the ball. It was tremendous to watch. It's just so interesting how calm these guys are on the ball now. Mm-hmm. Right? When you used to watch this team, even Carlos Heel, Diego Fagundes, Juan Agudelo, used to feel like a hot potato on them. Like, they got it. Like, I don't want this. Get this off me. All of a sudden, Bruce Arena comes in. It's like, yeah, give it to me. I'll take it.
Yeah.
You go there. I'll get you the ball. No worries. We'll figure it out. It's been incredible to watch.
What do you make of Juan Fernando Caicedo starting in this game? Because in my mind, Teal Bunbury's played some of the best soccer I've ever seen him play as a center forward. Gustavo Bo can play a center forward. He did play, started out on the left in this game and basically was a free roaming attacker coming off the wing. Carlos Heel's a free roaming attacker coming from the center as well, and they found their space. What do you make of Caicedo still being in that starting lineup?
David, doesn't it feel like we're getting a little bit stuck into the old Sporting Kansas City question of talent versus system? Because this team did win 4-0. There's a question of whether Juan Fernando Caicedo is good enough, but his team in the game that we're bringing this up for won 4-0 and played very, very
well. So you don't like my question?
Well, it's a perfectly fair question to ask. This is how I'm going to answer it, right? If you're going to put your most talent on the field for what they have, then maybe move Teal Bunbury to striker. Mm-hmm. You bring Christian Pena on. Maybe you find a way to get Diego Fagundes on the field. But at the same time, going back to that structure I just said, two center backs, one defensive midfielder, one center striker, and then other players with a ton of freedom, maybe you do just need a center striker who can occupy center backs, who can stretch the field. So if Caicedo does continue to play, keep that in mind. It's like the old who played Kyrie Shelton, right? Yeah, Kyrie Shelton started on a team that had the most points in the regular season in the West. You might not have loved watching him. He might not have been as talented as you want as an SKC fan, but they had the most points in the West. So I'm going to keep an eye on that with the Revs if Caicedo just fulfills the function that Bruce Arena is looking for.
There's a lot of special things going on in New England right now. Juan Agudelo's conversion into that number eight position has been fantastic.
That's been
And then Charlie Davis has said it on the show before. Luis Caicedo just being told, don't worry about possession. Like, your job is to win tackles in front of the center backs, and he looks very comfortable doing that. Also, I love the tuck. He's almost on Samuel Piette levels tucks with Luis Caicedo, which is such a defensive midfielder move. Yep. He's like, well, I got to let the ref know that they're pulling my jersey. Give me the call, ref. I get no respect.
Julian De Guzman before that, too.
Yeah, Julian De Guzman. GM of Ottawa Fury now. I saw him the other day.
Yeah.
Yep. So this Revs team, they're performing well. They're fun to watch. They'll face FC Cincinnati in their next game. Pretty good opportunity to keep this streak going. Gustavo Bo, a phenomenal goal, by the way, to start things off.
Are we going to talk about him for a second?
Hits off.
What did you make of his performance?
You've watched more of him than I have. So this is first. He seems good at a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I don't know what he's great at, and that might be fine. Because if he's good at everything, that could be enough for this team. Clean control, has a little bit of speed, but isn't lightning. You saw like the back heel in the box at one moment, different ideas than what other guys have, and clearly can strike a ball as well when he gets put into that situation. So that's what I saw from him, was just a high-level player across the board. I don't know if you need a guy like, obviously Carlos Vela is great, right? Mm-hmm. But a guy who can do one thing amazing to kind of build everything around, or if that's enough for this team in terms of getting him, because there is other talent on this roster. But it was definitely all positive. I saw no negatives from his performance.
Yeah, just an all-around really good soccer player. Crafty, sneaky, whatever you want to call it. He's just a clever player who can beat you in a lot of ways. It looked to me, if you were to describe his position or his role in the team, it was a pseudo-free role that started on the left more often than not, maybe started behind the striker. But it really looked to me like Bruce Arena gave Hill, Agudelo, Bunbury, and Bo just the instructions to say, play off each other.
Right.
You all know the spaces you need to take up, right, left, next to the striker, off the striker, figure it out with a specific instruction to know where Bo is and figure it out based off that.
And when you watch Hill play, I think you notice him. He likes to get outside, and I think because it's less mm-hmm. physical pressure and mm-hmm. demand on him to get touches without getting hit and yep. knocked and stuff. And so it'll fit perfectly because Pena mm-hmm. more is a inverted winger that he comes in with the ball
right.
and does something. But I think Bo might occupy space more that he'll leave.
And you really talk about, going back to the original point about the Houston Dynamo and players who fit together, it feels like this group is fitting together. Caicedo sits. You already mm-hmm. said it. He tackles, he moves the ball. Agudelo is not a thinker on the field, right? He's, give me the ball, I'm going to run, I'm going to chase. He's never been a cerebral player. He's been skilled, he's been energetic, and that's the role he's playing now, right? He covers ground, Hill reads off him, Bo reads off that, Hill reads off Bo, right? It feels like the pieces are coming together, and this is the exact type of team that Bruce Arena wants.
It's going to be exciting to watch the Revs over the next few weeks. They are still out of the playoff spots, but right now the bottom of the Eastern Conference just feels like it's all over the place. Another team right there on the bottom of the Eastern Conference, which is starting to feel pretty confident, is Toronto FC. They started off against the New York Red Bulls with one of the best goals of the year. I did the Raul Ruiz Diaz thing on Monday, and you guys all knocked it down. I'm bringing Josie back in on this one. The one touch back heel goal off a hard cross from, I'd say, 12 to 14 yards out in off the post.
Off of build out from their own.
Oh, now you're going to go soccer nerdy and not just pure.
Well,
finish.
It was a great finish, but it was also a great goal
yeah.
starting with the center backs.
The whole first 5 minutes, they dominated that game. And then Josie caps it off. Tim Parker right on his back. Nothing Luis Robles can do. And then Chris Armas said, I thought we, you know, made them uncomfortable and forced them out of their game plan at times. But for TFC, four-man back line now with Omar Gonzalez coming in. Mm-hmm. Josie back and healthy, which allows Pasuelo, I think, into a more comfortable position. Kalen said, I think, on this show on Monday, he sees this as one of the teams that can rise up the Eastern mm-hmm. Conference. They're basically 3 points out of second. That's how this whole thing kind of works out. How do you see this Toronto team now with these additions?
So here's what I wrote in the column this morning. I said it with Jason Davis on SiriusXM yesterday, and I doubled down on it this morning.
Oh, so okay. So it was just, no, Bobby's done it everywhere else. Why talk about it now?
So at Toronto,
yeah,
FC, and the New York Red Bulls are the two teams most likely to come out of the East in the playoffs to MLS Cup.
Interesting.
Because the Red Bulls do what the Red Bulls do, right? And even last night, they pushed Toronto out of passing, right? Toronto tried to pass at times. Red Bulls ran them over. As Chris Armas said, they had to adjust. Toronto won this one, but it felt like Red Bulls probably would have won this if this game would be played over the same way. Mm-hmm. Right? So Red Bulls have their it, and if you don't adjust, they will do very well against you. But Toronto, you look at that spine. They didn't play well. Red Bulls might have been the better team, but they're still so good at staying confident on the ball, breaking lines, running the patterns they've rehearsed. And then they have two incredibly talented players to make plays. So when I think about the Eastern Conference, for as much as I like Philadelphia, they need to win a big game before I would say they're the team to come out of the playoffs. NYCFC and Atlanta need to show more consistency about the way they do their patterns on the field, the way they defend and attack as a unit. But then these two teams, Toronto and Red Bulls, already have an it. They've already proven they can ride that it through the playoffs. They're my top two teams right now.
Interesting. The other thing I'm curious of is which one. Okay, so for Toronto FC, you want to do as well as you can in the regular season to be home. For Red Bulls, and this is coming off things. Do you want to be a home team for this playoff where now it's one leg? They have been so good at times on the road mm-hmm. when teams feel the need to play.
Great point.
But will teams feel that way in a one-game knockout?
It's a great point.
Boom. Made a great point.
I don't have a good answer to it. I mean, I would have said yes until what Atlanta United did last year.
Yeah, right. But that also comes off a first leg that they lost on the road, right? That changed the way the series got played out against the New York Red Bulls.
Well, Atlanta was always going to smash the ball long.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Home away. They had their game plan. They were not going to get Red Bulled by the Red Bulls.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see, obviously, these changes. We'll see for the first time ever in the postseason. We don't want to get there already. There's a lot of soccer left to play for Toronto, though. A win against Montreal, a weird game, but a ton of energy in that game. Then you come home, you get a performance from Josie. Michael Bradley looked more like himself in that one, and you start to see for Toronto FC what it could look like. Of course, they brought in a Tam Winger who didn't make his debut yet.
We talked a couple weeks ago about needing to manage Diego Chara's minutes. If we think that the Portland Timbers are going to make the playoffs and make sure Diego Chara is peaking mm-hmm. with the years he has on his leg, should we say the same thing about Michael Bradley? I mean, is he a 34-game starter now? Or is he someone you need to say, all right, Michael, the sample size is big enough. You don't have it in your legs to play at the proper level. We need to manage your minutes.
I would love to get a camera in the room while you have that conversation with Michael Bradley. This is a guy who has said, I want to be on the field in every single game. We've seen him play Canadian championship games midweek when his team already has a lead in this series, when they're at their peak competing on all fronts. We've seen him play early CONCACAF Champions League games in freezing cold Colorado. That is Michael Bradley to a T, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
It's amazing. It's what you want from a professional.
But I don't know if he is at the point yet where he's saying, yeah, I'm different. My body has changed. My abilities have changed and come out. Jonathan Osorio didn't get a start in this game. Marky Delgado did, so it'll be interesting to see how Osorio fits into all of this as the formation changes up, as they bring in these new players. And the final one we want to mention from Wednesday night, Atlanta United knocking off the Houston Dynamo 5-0. Yes, that sounds epic, and it was. But Albert Elise getting a red card in the 6th minute kind of changed things a little at Mercedes-Benz. So Atlanta United did what they had to do, took care of business. Emerson Heinemann gets on the field for a solid, I think it was about 70, 75 minutes. And that one looked very comfortable for them, which is positive. And Joseph Martinez scored. So all of the good things for Atlanta rebounding from that loss against Seattle. On the flip side for Houston, it's been a tough run, but off the field, a little bit of news. James Harden's been announced as a minority owner for the Houston Dynamo. He'll pick up about 5% of that club. Oscar De La Hoya, also already a celebrity minority owner of that team. So now Houston Dynamo, pure isolation soccer, 1v1 stuff, just 3-and-D, just get off of James Harden and get it done.
You're making a joke, but is that not the soccer they've been playing?
Yeah, that is absolutely true. That is very true. But you could see them maybe backload some crazy Albert Elise roster contract, you know, $40 million in 13 years, and then try and use the draft picks to get off of it. Lots of good Houston Rockets jokes I can make right now. But the beard is in the league. James Harden, one of the, I guess you could say one of what, the top, iconic-wise, top 10, 15 athletes in the world? You wouldn't say that? It's a pretty impressive
beard. Feels like a stretch, but I get what you're saying.
Dude, you know, always in the MVP voting. So now he is involved with Major League Soccer, which is exciting to see from him. We've got more excitement coming up in Major League Soccer. The All-Star Game is on the way. It's happening in Orlando this year, the game coming up at the end of the month. But first, we will have the Skills Challenge on July 30th, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. You could watch it on the MLS app. You could watch it on Twitch. You can watch it on Twitter as well, where you can interact, as there will be 3 sets of teams with 3 players each. An MLS All-Star group with Wayne Rooney, Carlos Vela, and Jonah Dos Santos. An Orlando team with Nani, Chris Mueller, and Seba Mendez. An Atletico Madrid team with Koke, Ace Ace, and one of the most expensive signings in world history, João Felix, who is on his way to being the next great Portuguese superstar. They will face off in 3 challenges. A shooting accuracy one from the penalty spot, a passing accuracy one where they will hit targets from different distances, and a touch and volley one where you get more points based on how you hit it first time, half volley, all that type of stuff. And these guys will go at it at the ESPN Wide World of Sports. You can go out and get tickets for that. It's a doubleheader with the homegrown game, so you can just like jam it all in. Bobby, now that I've done that, gotten all those rules down, how do you feel about this?
I'm excited, man. I love this type of stuff.
Yeah.
I love, is this what players do after practice or before practice? Like, most of the players that you see in this competition, the stars, are this talented because they were the ones to go out before training and put down a ball and say, $10 if I hit crossbar. Wow. Maybe it's more for these guys. I don't know. And then they stay after and do PK challenges with their friends.
You think Koke has a little more?
Or they have the youth player, the homegrown, cross balls in them for the finish. I'm excited to see them actually put this into a real competition with some fans and stakes on the line.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be a great environment. Other all-stars are going to be coming out, Atletico Madrid players, other celebrities. There'll be a judges panel that will be picking style points for these things. You can vote on that on Twitch and on Twitter, so you can be engaged. But there'll be a couple celebrity judges there, maybe some musicians, maybe some former Brazilian great players who are familiar to the area. You know who I'm talking about here, right? PC Giro, of course. Guys like that. So you never know who's going to be in the building. It's going to be a ton of fun. We're very excited about this. And it's a little historic. It's the first time this happened. But you talk about James Harden. You talk about the dunk contest. And like, that is the peak of what everyone wants. This is something that could be really cool because of the culture, like you said, around soccer. This is what players do. This is what we all do, right? We go to the park, play a little pickup, and then it's like, just hit me crosses. I just want to hit volleys. I just want to hit volleys till the rest of my life. And when you hit it clean, there's no better feeling. And now we're going to get to watch some of the best players in the world do that. And one of those players who will be serving up balls on this stage, he's our AT&T call to the field for the day, Mr. Chris Mueller. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So I heard your PR guy, Matt, who's alongside you in this beautiful hotel room right now, call you Cash. Is that your nickname?
Yeah, it seems to be trending a little bit throughout the squad. Some of the guys call me Cash, but some of the guys can't choke up the prize. They call me Cash. So some call me Chris, some call me Cash, and that's the way it goes.
So it's a new nickname. This is an MLS-based nickname, not like a growing up in Illinois nickname?
No. Yeah, it started actually after I scored my first goal against Portland, and Dom had started some live video after the game and just called me Cash. And from there, that's how it shot off.
Respect to Dom Dwyer. That's why the guy builds brands. This is what he does. That's how you get the commercials.
Exactly.
So, Cash, I think I might have to call you that for the rest of the interview. You're going to be a part of the Skills Challenge the first time ever. How did you find out about this? How did you know you were going to be involved?
It was actually just before a training session. One of the days, someone had came in and just kind of told me that I had been selected. They read it in an article somewhere, and I was kind of shocked, but I was also super excited after reading what it was about, that I'd be able to compete and do some showcase some of my skills against some of the world's best. I thought that was really exciting, and I'm still even right now excited to be a part of it coming up.
Yeah, Wayne Rooney, Joao Felix, Ace, some of the biggest names in the world, and Chris Mueller, you're going to be a part of this. Have you ever done anything like this?
No, I mean, I've horsed around with my friends maybe in the backyard doing some sort of skills challenge, crossbar, you know, little things like that, but none to this degree. So I'm really excited to see how it goes down and how it takes place.
Which category, which event are you most confident in going into this thing?
I'm honestly confident in all three, but I would have to say
that's why he's Cash.
Maybe the shooting.
Okay.
It looks like fun.
So you've got Seba Mendez and Nani on your team. What do you expect to see? It's shooting, touch and volley, and passing. Which do you see them being best at?
Maybe as a squad, maybe the touch and volley, because I'm pretty sure one of the guys has to serve a ball in. So in a way that we can all combine and try and make something happen in that sense, I think that that will be a fun drill. I think that the passing will obviously suit Seba and his range of passing that he has on the pitch, and Nani shouldn't have a problem with any of them, so should be good.
So I don't know if you know this, but Koke is a known listener and watcher of Extra Time.
Yeah, right.
He's watching right now. So look into that screen and give Koke what he needs to know going into this. Talk some trash.
Well, I guess that I know Koke pretty well from watching him a lot, but it's time for some of these guys to learn Cash.
Let's go. I might leave now. That might be the peak of this show. That is the moment I was waiting for. Chris Mueller's in the house. Atletico Madrid, Wayne Rooney, Carlos Vela, sit down. You're going to be part of this home side. Is the wall going to show up? Like, should we have a skills challenge wall?
I wouldn't be surprised if some of the wall came down and wanted to check it out. It's going to be a pretty cool event, especially taking place in Orlando. I wouldn't be surprised if we had some members from the wall there.
And the whole week in general, what do you think about the fact that in just your second year, you're going to be part of what is the host team for an MLS All-Star game?
Yeah, I think it's incredible. I honestly didn't know that the Skills Challenge was happening until I got selected for it. And once I was selected and seeing all this hype that's coming in around the MLS All-Star game that's coming to Orlando City or Explorer Stadium, excuse me. I think it's just amazing. I think it's really good for the league. I think it's a great, it'll be a great event. And obviously when you include world-renowned players and world-class players, I think that it's going to draw a lot of attention to it. So I'm really excited to be a part of it and can't wait to get out there.
Do you get nervous going into these types of events? Will you be nervous for this? It's a big stage with some big names. How do you react in these type of moments?
I think that I would be fine. I think that maybe thinking about it, you could see where some nerves come in just because you're with so many, like I said, just world-class players, even, you know, the All-Stars. Nani even took me a while to get used to playing with him because I grew up watching him play, like, my whole life. So, but I think that in the sense that this is going to be, like, a fun event, I think that from that standpoint, it's not – we're obviously all competing, but we're all out there, obviously, to have fun. So I think that I'll be able to handle the pressure pretty well in these situations.
And the big moments for things like this, we think dunk contest. You think about the celebrities on the sidelines, the other players losing it, freaking out when you do stuff. Is there anyone you're excited to see show up?
No, actually, I don't know. I'm not sure.
Should we expect a good haircut for this?
Yeah, I would say so. I might have to spice it up a little bit.
So, sprinkle some cash on there.
Chris, David mentioned the wall earlier. I want to go back to a moment that happened a couple weeks ago. U.S. Open Cup, you guys beat NYCFC in penalty kicks. Before those penalty kicks, the wall ran from their side of the field to behind the goal you were shooting on. It's become known as the running of the wall. What was that like for you? How did you experience that moment from the field?
I thought it was honestly an incredible moment just when they had selected to have the penalties on the opposite side of the wall, seeing the people kind of run through the stadium and pile on onto the other side of the pitch, where at first the security guards weren't going to let them through. And we had gotten some people down there to give them the go ahead, and they just swarmed behind the goal. And I think that going into that, that gave us a massive advantage to have fans behind our goalie and on the side that we were shooting. I think that definitely helped us get the win.
We saw Will Johnson turn around and start waving more fans over to the other side of the field. What were you guys saying to each other? What were you thinking while it was going down?
I was also trying to wave people across the pitch. I was telling everybody to get over there on that side of the goal so that it could help our guys, you know, in those situations. I think that in penalties, I think that if you got people screaming behind the goal and giving the goalkeeper a little bit of confidence and a little bit of motivation, I think that those little things might give a little edge when you sit down and look at it.
You're just in your second year as a pro player, drafted 6th overall last year by Orlando City, but you've played away games and you've played home games. What's the experience like playing in front of the wall, playing in front of these home fans in Orlando week in and week out?
It's amazing, honestly. I think that our fan base has been amazing. They've treated me so well since I got drafted last year. And I'm really thankful that I get to play in front of people like that. I think that's one of the things as a young kid that you dream of, is playing in stadiums, playing in front of people, and to be embraced the way that I have by the Orlando fans. It gives me so much motivation every week when I step out onto the pitch to be playing in front of them. So, yeah, they're awesome.
Besides the trademark running of the wall, is there any other one moment that sticks out to you in your time playing at Exploria Stadium?
I don't know. We've had so many good comeback wins, honestly, that have just been so so profound, like, in my career so far, that I think that to pick one would be an insult to the others. I think that all of them have been great.
I want to talk about your progression as a player, because when I look at someone like you with your ability on the ball, I ask myself, why did he spend 4 years in college? But then I go back through your numbers, and they weren't great through your first 2 years at Wisconsin, and then they really ramped up junior and senior year. What has been your progression like as a player, and you maybe being considered a late bloomer?
Yeah, I think that, you know, my first 2 years in school were kind of tough because I hadn't played as much as I would have liked. I thought the team was not performing at our potential. Obviously, we weren't playing too well, but as I've started to blossom here and I'm trying to continue to learn, I think that it's just been a matter of, you know, learning all the little things that it takes to be a good player. And it comes in confidence. It comes in mentality. I think that was a huge piece that I had to add to my game and learn about was the mental side of the game. And I think that as I continue to grow here, it's just going to be something that it's important. It's just going to keep getting bigger.
Fill in the blank for me here. Chris Mueller will be a member of the U.S. men's national team if he gets better at.
Chris Mueller will be a member of the U.S. men's national team if he gets better at.
No one's ever going to come on again with Bobby.
I guess I should have teed you up, Chris, because we talk on this show that you have the technical ability. You have, there's no other way to put it, the sauce that this men's national team pool needs, but maybe your game still needs to grow. So what are you working on throughout training, or maybe when training ends and you stay out there by yourself?
I mean, I'm honestly just working on a little bit of my technical aspects after training every day, and that's shooting, that's one touch and first touch in the pocket and half turns, little things like that. But I think that it's just going to have to come down to consistency and production. I think that that's something that I just want to continue to build on and continue to put up good numbers. I think that that's something that's really important and is something that could hopefully push me into the pool someday.
You talk about consistency. Last year, you came out with a bang, scored some goals early, got that wall up on their feet, as you said, those great comebacks. And then from a goals point of view, from a stats point of view, it went into a lull later on in the season. Is the rookie wall a real thing? Did you find that how much harder it was physically or mentally to be consistent in professional soccer?
Yeah, I thought that last year especially it was tough with the season that we had and it being my first year in the league. I thought that the way that I came out, like you said, and scored 3 goals in 3 games or something like that, I kind of maybe got too high. And I think that I've learned that this game is all about staying consistent through your the lows and through the times where things are good. So you don't want to be up in the peaks and you don't want to be down in the valley. I think that finding that consistent level of just trying to take it game by game, day by day, trying to take something out of every training sessions, trying to make those little small improvements so that in the long term you could see some big improvements.
And then as a team for Orlando City, this is one of the best runs since you've been a part of the group. We mentioned it going to the semifinals of the Open Cup for the first time ever, a few points out of a playoff spot right now. What's the feeling in the group about the way you're trending?
Yeah, we have a lot of belief. I think that we've ingrained a pretty good identity and culture into what we got going on here. And I think that if you look back at a lot of the games so far this year, I think that we should even have more points than we do right now. So seeing where we are right now on the table, it doesn't give us too much to worry about. But it also it's a reminder that, you know, with the games that we've been playing, we know we've been playing good football. We know that we have been doing all the things that we want to try and do. I think that the belief in the group is there. And as we continue to get going here, I don't know how many 15 games left or something like that. I think that there's a lot to play for with where we're at right now on the table.
Two huge questions to close you out on. First, we've seen some quality goal celebrations from you. How much work is going into those? How much is Dom Dwyer and Nani helping develop your goal celebration game?
I think that I'm trying to develop my own celebration and not trying to continue to steal, because I've always done Ronaldo's celebration, even when I was back in school at Wisconsin. And Nani told me after the last game that Ronaldo said, "Hey, tell this kid to stop doing my celebration."
Whoa!
I think he was joking, though. I think he must have been. So, no, I mean, yeah, the work has to be done for sure, because I think that coming up with my own cash celebration would be a good thing.
We're looking forward to that. I will drop that cash celebration on this show every time you score if you come through with it. I got to close you up on a big one. Mr. Ben Bear, who's part of MLSsoccer.com, comes on the show quite often. He is a University of Wisconsin alum. He is forever forward trying to push the game. You, Tom Barlow, Drew Connor, basically the three best players ever from your school soccer program. One, is Tom Barlow the greatest goal scorer of all time in the world? And two, what happened that all of a sudden you guys came together as a class and now you're a soccer school?
I don't know. I think that it was just kind of a desire to push the program in a different way. I think that even guys like Mark Segbers and Mike Catalano, who hasn't gotten his shot through it all yet, I think that just having a group of core guys who believed in something bigger than what was there, trying to see a big picture in the future. I think that once we all put that vision in hand and just went for something, I think that it turned out to be great. And you could see it now. Tom scored even yesterday. He's a good goal scorer. He's fast. He's strong. He gets in behind. He's got a good finish on him. And, you know, for that being said, I like to play with Tommy. And the University of Wisconsin is definitely on the come up.
There you go. Cash said it himself. He's going to get to show off for the MLS All-Star Skills Challenge in Orlando coming up at the end of the month in front of Atletico Madrid, MLS All-Stars, and everyone else in the world, as it'll be on Twitter and Twitch streaming the entire time. And, of course, you can catch him against the Portland Timbers later tonight and throughout the MLS season for Orlando City. Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to join us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, Cash in the building. That was a lot of fun, Bobby. Chris Mueller coming up as a star. You were serious, though, when you asked him the national team thing. Like, you think he's on the border of being able to push that line?
Yeah, I'd like to see him in the national team already. I mean, what do we have any other players who play like him, running at players, that much comfort, that much confidence? I know he might doesn't have the it factor of a Jordan Morris or a Jonathan Lewis with their pace, but I'd like to see Chris Mueller get a call up at some point.
It's been fun to watch him for Orlando City. It'll be fun to watch him in that Skills Challenge July 30th, 8 p.m. Eastern time on Twitch, on Twitter. You can watch it on the MLS app. And then, of course, the All-Star game coming up the next day, Atletico Madrid against the MLS All-Stars, coming from Explorer Stadium July 31st. And, Bobby, you know how big a Diego Simeone fan I am. I'm a pretty big Atletico Madrid fan as well. I am extremely excited for this one. It's going to be awesome. I might wear my jersey. Is that okay? Or is that unprofessional?
You're going to wear the Atletico Madrid jersey.
I have a pre-war Atletico Madrid jersey. This is like pre-1940s.
Okay.
Boom. It's obviously not the real one from then. Otherwise, I'd put it in a box. We'll see what happens when you look up this weekend and what's going on in Major League Soccer. It starts on Friday night, and it's probably the first thing we'd talk about anyway, but it's going to get kicked off 10 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN, the big one, El Trafico. LAFC hosting the LA Galaxy out in California. Bobby, LAFC, basically right now, the best team in Major League Soccer history. Before we get into that, let's talk about how much better they can get, because they have an open DP spot. Andre Horta did not work out for them. What would you do if you had this open spot and you were putting it together?
I would remind myself of the line, don't let perfect be the enemy of amazing, because they're amazing, right? What growth could you have by signing a new player over what they already have, compared to the idea that we know how hard it is for big name players to come into this league sometimes? And yes, maybe you get a Brian Fernandez up top. Maybe you get an Andre Horta. Maybe you get a PT Martinez. This is to say, don't try and upgrade your team this year. Get a player that you use for the long term. Find a DP that's young, that you can help grow, that you buy low on to hopefully sell a little bit higher. So I'd be surprised if they use that DP spot to improve right now, but they should use it thinking down the road, because Latif Blessing's going to want his money. Mark Anthony Kay, Edward Atuesta, Eddie Seagal, all of these players, if they don't go to Europe, are going to want...
Most of them are on contract. I mean, Atuesta got extended this year. Latif got extended, but just the one year.
Because that stops athletes from asking for more money.
For sure, absolutely. Although, everything you just described is Andre Horta.
Mm-hmm.
So they tried that, and it didn't go so well the first
time. You think
time.
They didn't hope Andre Horta would make his way into the team quickly?
I think they did, but the point was they didn't need him, right? He had the flexibility to take his time, find his feet, develop. When you actually look at this club, and it's ridiculous to say, they actually haven't always spent high numbers well. When you look at like the big numbers they have, it's Diamande, it's Christian Ramirez, it's Lee Wynn, and then obviously the two DPs have hit the other ones, and then under that it's Atuesta, and then it's Walker Zimmerman. Eddie Segura, I think, is on about $200,000. They have crushed it on their other moves. Mm-hmm. So it's almost to the point where it's like, don't use it. That's not what they're best at. Why use it?
That's complicated when we talk about investment, because I don't know the exact numbers, and we talked about it earlier in the show with them setting it up. So you could say on the back end, they didn't spend a ton on transfer fees, they didn't spend a ton on wages, mm-hmm. but maybe on the front end, those scouts we talked about, that scouting mm-hmm. structure, the agents, maybe they spend more on that. So we don't exactly know what they spent on these players, but whatever they're doing is working.
So then one more specific, you say buy young, someone who can develop, blah, blah, blah. Is there a position in mind? I think the obvious one would be center forward, but it's tough because you have to spend normally higher numbers to get quality at that position.
I don't know that I would say a position. I think I would find the right player for the right price with within the right amount of potential that you can help grow, and then he turns into a star.
It's interesting to see for LAFC.
What position would you get?
I think it has to be center forward. One, because when you're talking about selling later, that's where you're going to get the most money.
Go get Mara Minotas. Exactly. Go get Ronaldo Pena.
It's literally Minotas. Minotas is the dream scenario. Their scouts in Colombia have been fantastic already with Segura and Atuesta, so they've done well there. You could also maybe look at young Americans around the world and see if there's any potential there, similar to what they did with Mark Anthony Kay. I don't know who I'm talking about in that scenario. Maybe it's Josh Sargent, but that would probably not happen. It'll be interesting to see for LAFC. I mentioned it. They're cruising. They're arguably the best team in Major League Soccer right now. They've never beaten the LA Galaxy. How big is this one for them as a club?
The last point, if we're going to talk about the future of LAFC, we also have to note that at the under-15 level, they have one of the two undisputed best teams in the academy. Right, those kids are going to be turning 16, 17. We see players around Major League Soccer playing at that age, including Efra Alvarez across LA playing for the Galaxy. Just keep that in mind as you think about where LAFC are going next, what Bob Bradley wants to do. They have elite prospects coming through that system.
Yep.
Re-ask your question.
Okay. How much does this game mean to this club? They're probably going to win Supporters Shield this year. They're arguably the greatest season in Major League Soccer history. They've never beaten the Galaxy.
Can I phrase that answer by saying it matters more to the Galaxy?
No, you cannot.
That's not a proper answer?
You can, but you'd be wrong.
What?
Yeah.
You're going to tell me this game matters more to LAFC, who are trotting. They could go into a slow walk and still win a Supporters Shield.
I can tell you this because as someone who's a sports fan, the last thing you want is to have any club in the bag for your rival to come at you with. And there will be...
This feels like a cliche that sports people use.
Get out of here.
Actually,
if
mean anything.
If LAFC doesn't win this game, they'll be like, hey, the Galaxy, you're a joke. We're the top team in the league. Carlos Vela is the best player in the league. Zlatan has some very interesting comments about that as well. And LA Galaxy fans will come back and just say, you've never beaten us. It won't be right. It may not be the trump card, but they can say it. And that hurts as a fan. I'm going to tell you that hurts. You don't agree?
As someone with a lot of pain in my life as a Knicks fan, I know all about these things.
I've never seen one of my sports teams win anything, but beating your rival is what you want. Like that,
I don't know, man.
It gives you another moment.
I get what you're saying, but I just think LAFC are so far ahead. I mean, everything they've done, the quality of their soccer, one game doesn't diminish that. Yeah, maybe if it was close. Maybe if they were only up by, what are they up? Right now,
11 points, 12 points.
Yeah, maybe they were only up by 9 points. They're up by 11 points.
But exactly. That part is done. What's next? Wow. And for them, what's next is winning in this rivalry or winning the entire, you know, two legs over the course of this season.
The separation of points, but not only the separation of the quality of soccer.
Yeah.
David, what LAFC are doing compared to the Galaxy, yes, they have Zlatan. They've got decent defensive shape. Jonah Dos Santos has been excellent at times. But the quality in soccer, right? If you truly love this sport, the product that these two teams are putting on the field is also an ocean apart. And even if the Galaxy win once, and it's almost hard to imagine they don't just win, but also outplay it. Is there any percentage that you would put on this table for the Galaxy, not just winning, but actually outplaying and looking like the better team?
I would say no, because the way the team is structured, and we've agreed on this in the past, with Zlatan on the field is not free-flowing, dominating possession types games. I think they've gotten better at that in 2019 than they were at 2018. They've probably gotten better at everything since 2018 as a club, because last year was pretty bad for them. But that's not the way they play, and it's not going to be the way they play, I think, if they're successful. I think for them it's going to be getting an early goal, getting something, whatever comes out of nowhere, you could say, with Zlatan, and then sitting as a group and defending in numbers.
I hope the Galaxy is an organization. My guess is they do, right? Because Scalotto's smart. Chris Klein played some good soccer in Major League Soccer. You have the stars on your chest.
Did Bruce for the Galaxy when they won cups?
Yeah.
Did they? Or they had great players that were fun to watch?
I appreciate, you know, I appreciate this distinction. I appreciate this distinction so much. But no, they still played. I mean, was it 11, 13, 14, mm-hmm. the 3 years? They still played attractive soccer.
Okay.
And it wasn't in the same way that Pep Guardiola does, because Bruce Arena isn't Pep. He has his own little secret sauce of talking to players and giving the right balance of instruction, but laissez-faire. But it was still attractive. And I just look at this Galaxy team with the stars from the past, with the sash, with the trophies. And it just, the quality of soccer isn't there. It's a team of moments. It's a team that rides on the shoulders of a star player, which when you put it in comparison to what LAFC are doing, it has to drive people and Carson nuts.
Do you want to talk about Zlatan's comments about Vela, or should we move on?
They actually don't interest me at all. Yeah, why don't you read them?
I don't even have them with me, so I can't. But
paraphrase.
He basically said, I'm a better player than Carlos Vela because when I was in my prime, which Vela is in now, I was doing better things in Europe and Vela's not. Don't know how that argument works, because the question was currently, and Zlatan's answer was to why he was currently a better player.
Logically flawed. We can both agree, logically flawed.
Which is shocking considering the way Zlatan always goes about logic.
We
do understand the point.
We like the flex.
Yeah.
Logically flawed.
I'm sure LAFC fans will enjoy it if Carlos Vela gets in on his left foot at some point over the course of this game. It's going to be a great way to start the weekend. Saturday, a ton of action across Major League Soccer, and then finishing up Sunday with 3 national TV games. Atlanta hosting DC United, 4 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN, and then that will be followed up after a little bit of a break with 7:30 p.m. Eastern time on FS1, Orlando hosting Red Bulls in a doubleheader. Cascadia Cup, Seattle hosts Portland. That one also on FS1. It's going to be a great weekend of soccer. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And then it's followed up. Midweek games again next week. The League's Cup kicking off for the first time ever. LA Galaxy will be one of the teams hosting. They will host on Tuesday night against Club Tijuana, 11 p.m. on ESPN. That's coming right after Chicago Fire, Cruz Azul. And then on Wednesday, Houston hosting Club America and RSL hosting Tigres. That one, those two on UDN as well as on ESPN Plus. All of these games available in Spanish on UDN. There'll be a show here to talk about that one. The League's Cup, will double its size already next year, just being announced. The tournament expanding, more MLS teams, more Liga MX teams in it. That coming up next year. We will talk about that on Monday. We'll preview these games. So let us know what you think at extratime@mlssoccer.com. Extratime@mlssoccer.com and at extratime on Twitter. What do you think about the League's Cup expanding? We heard Don Garber's comments when the final was being announced in Las Vegas to Hercules Gomez alongside the president of Liga MX, saying, we want this partnership to grow. We want us as two leagues to grow closer together going forward. Bobby, these feel like historic moments when you look back in 10 years and you see what this has become or what soccer in North America has become. It feels like these few moments are going to be key when you look back. It's going to be pretty cool to watch. Let's move on to the mailbag. And we didn't talk about the crew when we talked midweek, so we're going to talk about them here because we have gotten a couple emails from crew fans, especially Dan in Columbus, and he said, crew is officially in the worst 15-game streak in club history. Some in the fan base are angry with Caleb Porter. I think this is a mistake given the circumstances. Injury, Valenzuela out for the season, Higuain out for the season, Harrison Offal missing 6 weeks, call-ups for international and Zardes Trapp, and Mensa, the sale of Zach Steffen, as well as the transition of the front office, which didn't allow them to shop in the winter transfer window. So basically, crew lost their entire spine of the team midway through the season. Having said that, being historically bad is not so good, so the manager has to take some blame. And he says, I say Porter has been better than he looks. Statistically, the team performance has been trending up despite not getting results. Do you have some agreement there, or do you disagree?
No, it's definitely been a bit unfortunate for the crew, right? If you come into the season and you have the competitive advantage of your two outside backs being maybe the best tandem in MLS and they both get hurt, there goes not just starter quality players, but the backbone of what you're trying to build. But it's also fair to say that Caleb Porter hasn't done a great job with it, right? He was dealt a tough hand this year. He hasn't played that hand particularly well. It's somewhere in the middle, but I mean, this is a guy who's won MLS Cup. He's won championships in college. He's played really fun soccer along the way. He deserves to be given the chance, and he will be given the chance to find a way to make it better.
And it was stated here, but when you look at crew fans and you say, well, why is it going to get better? Literally, three of their four starters along their back line have missed almost all of the season. When you look at the rotation at center back alongside those two fullbacks, and then Zach Steffen leaving as well, you look moving forward, you know they have one of the most competitive central midfields in the league when they have those options behind them. And then you talk about a young DP making his debut in Diaz. You talk about what you have in Sosa, maybe here or there, but you've got a little bit of talent coming through, and then Zardes already locked in up top. There's cornerstones to say going forward, this is how it will get better for Columbus.
Yeah, I also think we just undervalued or underestimated the difference in systems, right? Greg Berhalter's strict structure.
I'm not surprised by this.
Okay, that's good to know. But to go from having a detail-oriented positioning, ideas and what you do on the ball, to a Caleb Porter a little bit more free, a little bit more figured out on the fly, it's hard to go from A to B.
And when you talked about with Pano, like, and the Houston Dynamo example they were using, right? I think there's an element for players of being good because you go into a system, but also having the confidence to know a coach came and got me for a specific reason, and I fit this well. And Greg Berhalter, at times, we talked about, you know, maybe not having the big money DPs, but getting more talent, more production out of players. That was, I think, because of the environment he built and guys coming in knowing exactly what they meant to Greg Berhalter and exactly how he wanted to play the game. And then you just switch coaches. It doesn't just change that way, right? Caleb Porter can't say, by the way, you're so important to me, because he wasn't the one who sat in a room and said, hey, sign with us and come to Columbus. Right. I've scouted you for 6 months, and I think you see the mental drop off there.
Right. Let's transition there to a question that wasn't submitted, but I'm going to ask it, David.
Okay.
So who are the final two spots in the Eastern Conference? And it feels like the Columbus crew aren't going to make it.
Oh, you're talking about the postseason now.
Yes.
You're just jumping me at that out of nowhere. Are you already locking in the top five?
In Philadelphia, Atlanta, New York, and NYCFC.
Not DC.
I will put DC on the bubble.
Interesting.
DC.
So you're saying who are the final three then?
Sure.
I will give you I will say Toronto. I will say Montreal, because Nacho Piatti is going to return, it sounds like, in about a week. And I think he's going to play as a man on a mission in his last year. And having that guy who can change the shape of the field is a huge one. So the two Canadian sides in there.
So that leaves DC United.
Yeah.
That leaves the New England Revolution, Orlando, and Chicago.
That's a really tough question.
That's why I asked it.
Yeah. I'm going to say DC right now.
Okay.
What about you?
I'm going to keep DC in. I'm going to keep Toronto in. I bumped Montreal. it comes down to New England or Orlando. I have Orlando because I think New England got too good, too quick, and teams will now play them like a good team, whereas they will not start to play Orlando like a good team, and they just kind of chip away at points.
Fascinating. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch. It's a great weekend of action coming up, starting with El Tráfico, 10 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN on Friday night. We're looking forward to All-Star. We'll be down in Orlando, so if you're in the area, if you're going to the All-Star game, let us know. Leagues Cup coming up next week. We'll have all your previews on Monday and review of the weekend. I think Andrew Wiebe will be back, although you never know. Maybe he fell off a boat somewhere in the Greek Islands and is just disappearing and hanging out, and I'm sure everyone else will filter back in and forgot that they ditched us for this one. But Bobby, it's been a pleasure with you.
It's been fun.
This is what we do basically when we go on Open Cup trips, and this has become my life now, but I love it. I absolutely love it. Thanks so much to everyone for listening, everyone for watching. Have a great weekend.